Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Nathan Totten. We have a special episode. It's live, and well, we're joined by our usual guest, Nick Harris.
Sometime.
I was going to leave you out, don't worry.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Nick Harris, and nice to meet you, and we've got a very special guest here.
Thanks, yeah.
Scott. Oh, sorry, go ahead. I don't think you need an introduction. Yeah, that was a good point. You don't even need to introduce him.
My name's Scott Guthrie, and thanks for joining us.
Everyone, yeah, everyone certainly knows you. I think you're definitely a celebrity around these parts, so... very cool. So today we're going to obviously talk about Windows Azure, since this is Cloud Cover, and you are the Windows Azure, the man, I guess, for Windows Azure, right? So why don't you tell us a little bit about just kind of what your job is, what your role is with Windows Azure, because I think a lot of people know you as the ASP.NET, the guy, I guess, for ASP.NET. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do with Windows Azure?
Yeah, well, a lot of people ask me, sort of, what exactly do I do? Important, I always say up front, like, I actually still do most of .NET as well.
Yep.
So all the server-side pieces of .NET, including ASP.NET, the Entity Framework, WCF, and I actually manage more of the server-side pieces of .NET than I used to. But those all live in my organization as well as and then where I spent the majority of my time in the last 12 months, in terms of my personal time, has been on Windows Azure. And so I kind of lead the Windows Azure application platform team. That kind of owns the overall developer experience, the overall end-to-end experience on Windows Azure.
Cool.
And a lot of the core application platform components and services running within it. So,
right.
Keeps me busy.
Awesome. So, for those people who may not have been sort of perhaps using Windows Azure recently, or those that have, over the last year, I guess recently, we've made some big announcements. And there's some significant additions to the Azure platform. Would you like to sort of talk a little bit about what those may be?
Yeah, I did a blog post on this last week. So if you're looking for more details, you can definitely check out my blog at weblogs.asp.net/kagu for a more in-depth rundown. But at a high level, last week we shipped on Thursday probably the most substantial update of Windows Azure we've ever done. It really brings a whole bunch of new capabilities that you can take advantage of. One is just kind of a re-envisioned experience, so a new admin portal that makes it really easy to work with services and kind of visualize things and have built-in monitoring. A new set of SDKs that you can use to program against the entire surface area of the product. We have really great .NET and Visual Studio support and significantly enhanced that as part of this most recent update. But we also now have other languages as well. Including even Mac and Linux SDKs that you can use. And then in terms of capabilities, one of the big things that we introduced this past week is virtual machine support. So you can now host any virtual machine in Windows Azure, whether it's running Windows or Linux. You can do virtual private networking to an existing enterprise network or another data center. We have a really great new website option that we've launched, which makes it sort of super easy, and literally in seconds you can create a new website. And you can now deploy to websites also in seconds and stand up web presence on Azure. We support end-to-end what we call continuous delivery, so that you can integrate publishing of applications and solutions with your source control system. And so you can either use TFS or Git to basically check in your app and then kick off a build, kick off unit tests, and automatically deploy a solution into Azure. We introduced new distributed caching capabilities that allow you to build apps that are faster and scale out across a distributed set of machines really fast, and more. New media features, new data centers, new hardware, new networking, lots of new capabilities. So we're pretty excited. Anyone can try out all those features for free. We have a 90-day free trial with Windows Azure you can sign up for today. The other thing that's worth mentioning, since probably a lot of people watching that have MSDN subscriptions, is if you're an MSDN subscriber, you actually get Azure hours as part of your MSDN account. And so if you're an MSDN professional or higher, you have a certain number of hours that you can use. And so you can actually take advantage of all the stuff I just described, in many cases for free, because it's just included as part of your MSDN subscription. So it's a really powerful offering, a lot easier to use, and a lot of great things you can take advantage of.
Great. So one of the things you mentioned that I think is really exciting for developers is the integration. You talked about, you know, we have new stuff for Visual Studio. We have new tools for even Visual Studio 2010. We have tools for Node development. You want to tell me a little bit about some of the teams internally, you know, some of the tools we're building to kind of bring that developer experience together, you know, and make it super easy and super powerful?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, one of the things that's been nice to read in the last couple of days of people saying, wow, you know, I looked at Azure before, but now it's super easy. It feels like butter. It's like smooth as butter. It's really fast to get going and make progress on. And that's something we've focused a lot on over the last 12 months. We did kind of a point update in December where we fixed a lot of things. And then this most recent release in the last couple of days really kind of transformed the Azure experience. You know, one of the things that we've kind of focused on when we kind of brought the team together about a year ago was, you know, how do we think end-to-end? How do we actually kind of help people fall into what I call the pit of success, where the right logical stuff just happens, and the stuff that people kind of expect or need in order to build a real solution is kind of provided out of the box in a really easy way. And so we spent a lot of time just focusing on, you know, taking the team and saying, let's do app building together. Let's use the what was then, up a year ago, the experience. And it was kind of eye-opening. A lot of people were like, wow. You know, when you really want to build something, there's a lot of different pieces you got to figure out, and we got all these different admin tools, and these SDKs don't work together, and the documentation's all over the place. And so a lot of what we did over the last year is just pulled the product together and spent a lot of time kind of refining that, and it's been really gratifying to kind of see the feedback in the last week. And as part of that, you know, we've also enabled, you know, spent a lot of time in the SDK with .NET and Visual Studio in particular. That's kind of our, you know, one of the main focuses that we've emphasized. You know, we have added other languages and other platforms. And the whole time, though, when we've added it, it's not been, let's just add a checkbox. It's really, we're not going to say we have it until it's great. And how do we do that end-to-end experience so that we support the tools and the infrastructure that people expect and make it really work great?
Cool. Yeah, I actually noticed, I mean, not along with our Windows Azure SDK for Node. I like Node. I spend some time playing around with that. I noticed last week we shipped like the library for Node for SQL Azure now,
yep.
Or SQL databases.
Yep.
So I mean, really bringing that end-to-end experience to, you know, not only .NET developers but the other developers. So
yeah.
I think that's great. Let's just remind the viewers we are taking questions live. If you let me hold up the sign. I know our regular viewers are probably sick of Nick and I asking questions, especially after the last episode, which was about an hour and a half long. So it was an epic episode of Cloud Cover. So tweet your questions to Scott, Channel 9 Live, and we'll be happy. Oh, there's the camera. Did I hold it right? Yes, okay. I just figured out that we were on the TV there. So anyway, so someone we have a few interesting questions up here. Let's go into this one. So I guess we've got a question. Any plans on building a web-based IDE for ASP.NET? I know there's some partner companies that we work with that do similar things. Do we have any plans internally for something like that?
That's a good question, yeah. So the question is, kind of, is there plans for a web-based IDE for doing ASP.NET? It's something that we've looked at, and we certainly have prototyped. You know, the challenge always with web-based IDEs has been they're really good for certain things, and then, you know, would you sit down and build a giant app for it? And, you know, when you compare kind of the experience that you get today inside, say, the Visual Studio IDE or even inside the Web Matrix IDE, you know, providing the full set of debugging IntelliSense kind of experience is hard. So, you know, I'm always torn on that. I think the idea sounds great. I haven't quite seen one that goes fully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where I think it makes a lot of sense is where you want to be able to kind of quickly on a live site be able to make edits and tweaks. And it might not be what you use for kind of the end-to-end workflow, but certainly for parts of the overall development lifecycle, having that option of just popping up in a browser and making a quick change is something that we want. So I think that is something you'll probably see us kind of introduce in different capabilities in the future.
Cool.
So in the meantime, developers who may be requiring those fast updates to websites, the new publish feature in Visual Studio, for instance, is extraordinarily fast to Windows Azure websites.
Yeah.
So as an interim, that's great as well. But I think we've also got some other publishing options like Git, TFS, and FTP.
Yeah. One of the things we try to do with our new website feature that we just launched on Thursday is enable you to basically use whatever tools you already have in order to deploy. You know, in the past, we kind of require you to have, like, you have to use a custom tool from us in order to do it. And we really try to say, hey, you know, let's not make people use new tool, learn new tools. Let's let them use the tools they have. And so with websites, you can literally use FTP or secure FTP to publish. And so any FTP tool on any platform just works. We also support Web Deploy, which is one that we've used in Visual Studio in the past. That is a nice option, which you can actually not only deploy the content and the code of your website, but also bring along a database, including migration capability, so you can evolve the database schema on the fly. And then we support two source control-based solutions. One is TFS, and the other one is Git, which is a distributed source control solution. And so the, you know, the nice thing on Git is, you know, you mentioned Node or you mentioned Python or PHP, you can basically on any platform, whether it's a Mac or Linux dev machine, check it in Git, point it at Azure, Git push it, and it'll just work. And again, that's sort of going back to this mantra of, with Azure, of like, how do we enable that end-to-end experience? And part of that is working with the mature tools that people already have.
Cool.
On whatever platform they want.
Great. So I think you've had a lot of, I mean, we've showed a lot of demos of using, you know, websites. You showed how to use that in the keynote, and you integrated with Service Bus. We've seen demos, cloud services, VMs. I think one of the really cool things is how those all can tie together, right? I mean, I think someone who maybe picks up Windows Azure may look at VMs and think, oh, well, I can deploy my existing app there, but you know, maybe doesn't always consider that you could use websites or other services. Do you want to talk a little bit about kind of, you know, how we bring all those things together, the variety of services we offer that really make the developer experience, you know, very powerful and also flexible?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of something was part of this release that we've really tried to do is in the past with Azure, it was a little bit of a kind of my way or the highway kind of approach where you had to write to our very specific programming model or nothing would work. And, you know, what we heard from a lot of customers was, I like that programming model, I think that's where I want to get to, but I also have existing code, or I want to be able to do Windows and Linux, or, you know, I got this web front end and it's a little bit overkill what you're providing me. And so, you know, one of the things we've tried to do with this most recent release is really have a flexible story where, you know, you kind of have the ability to use whatever you want to use, using whatever tools, and more importantly, be able to use all these different things and actually mix them up. So that you have the flexibility to say, hey, I want to use a managed website model for my front end, but I can spin up a VM and I can put SQL or SharePoint or BizTalk or if it was Linux, you know, Mongo or React or Redis mm-hmm. in it and connect to it. And I could have one language on this end, one language on that end, one OS here, one OS there. Or I could have a cloud service that talks to my website or vice versa. And that flexibility to use platform as a service and infrastructure as a service together, the ability to use everything, the best of the Microsoft ecosystem and the best of the open source ecosystem together, is I think what really makes Windows Azure unique.
Great.
And it gives you a lot of developer productivity, a lot of flexibility, a lot of options, and ultimately puts you in control.
So one question which I think people may ask is, if they're just starting with the platform and they're perhaps trying to develop something, how do they identify which feature is perhaps best suited to what they're trying to use? Like, if I'm a mobile developer and I'm building out some back-end services for some apps I'm building, you know, should I go and look at cloud services or should I look at Windows Azure websites or what's a VM role? Can you perhaps provide a little insight into people as to what each specific vertical is best suited for?
Yeah, we have actually on our Windows Azure website, we do have some guidance in terms of, hey, specific characteristics of what you're looking for. You know, the thing I typically recommend to someone who's new to Windows Azure is, you know, spend 90 minutes with it, spend an hour with it, and try out all three. Yeah. You know, the nice thing about the website model is you can create a site in 6 seconds, and then you can deploy a site in maybe 10 seconds for the first time, and you can do updates in seconds as well. And so, you know, build a website. Pick whatever language you want, build and deploy it, see how it works. Stand up a VM. You know, pick one in Windows, pick one in Linux. You know, and either terminal server in or SSH in and install whatever you want within that VM. and then, you know, take that website that you created earlier, convert it to a cloud service, add a middle tier, and deploy it, stick a cache on it. And the beauty about, I think, Windows Azure now is you can do all those things. And I just finished an hour-long talk about Windows Azure, and I did all three of them and more. And you can do all of those and actually experiment with the platform now really, really easily. And our free trial option is designed to give you the ability to do that at no cost. And you know, and once you get a handle on them, then you can look at the specifics of, do I need this feature or that feature? And we do have guidance for that. But you know, I think the ability to kind of quickly experiment is one of the nice things about it. The other thing that's nice about it is we try to add coherency across the platform. So if you're using our admin portal, you actually see a unified view across all three. You see the same kind of performance monitoring data, regardless of whether it's a VM website or cloud service. You know, it's all in the same view. You can link things. You can integrate them. And you know, again, that gives you the ability where if you learn one thing, switching to another is pretty easy. And in the same way that we have, you know, I saw Jeffrey on right before, Jeffrey Snober, who's responsible for PowerShell. You know, in the same way that we support the ability to do everything in the portal from a GUI perspective, you know, we're also shipping PowerShell scripts as well as Bash scripts for other platforms so that you can manage everything from the command line as well using a unified management API, using a unified monitoring API. And again, you can use single SDK for any language and program against all those services. So that kind of coherency, I think, gives you a lot of flexibility. And, you know, we see a lot of customers that will start off with one, and then, you know, the first 6 months of their app, they're building it this way, and then they say, oh, I want to add this capability or this feature, and you can kind of either evolve it or bring on more services and build out your apps using a variety of different technologies.
All right. Cool. Well, we've got a bunch of Twitter questions coming in, I guess. How about we jump into some of those? I think people have some interesting ones. So the first question we have here is, or I guess the second one, is Azure now a cost-effective way for us to move from a shared hosting environment? And also, I guess a follow-up to that is, when does the free hosting for, I think they're probably referring to Windows Azure websites, right. Do we have any plans, or when does the free hosting for that end?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think for general kind of website hosting now, Azure is a pretty cost-effective way to do it. You know, we're not trying to be the cheapest out there, so there are lots of really good hosting providers out there. I think part of the Azure kind of promise, if you will, is the ability to kind of scale up and do a lot more capabilities. So if you're just looking for, basic blog, there's lots of good blogging platforms out there and blogging websites out there. But yeah, you can now do that pretty easily on Windows Azure. And we do have this free offer you can take advantage of, which is really kind of intended primarily as kind of a dev playground, if you will, where you can build a site. You know, for a low volume site, that might be more than enough. But it gives you a chance to actually kind of experiment with the platform. And then the really cool thing about Azure is the ability, once you build the app, to just say, oh, okay, now I've built it, I've developed it, it's good, it's live, I'm getting some traffic, let's scale it up. And without having to redeploy, I can literally, in the admin experience, just say, scale up, let's add 12 cores and, you know, 30 gigs to it.
Which happens in, I noticed in your demo earlier, it actually happened faster than you were even expecting it to deploy from shared to reserve, which is
it's a good
quite yeah. Awesome. Exactly. It's not a bad thing to have.
When I first started doing Windows Azure demos a year ago, I had lots of slides, so I'd do something and then I'd explain something for 10 minutes and then come back and it'd be done. And it's nice now with the new portal and some of the new management stuff that we've done, especially in the website model, I run into the problem where I have about 6 seconds to explain it before it's done, and it pops open, it's done, and that's a good problem to have. So we try to make things a lot faster. Yeah,
it means you have to pull a lot more content into your presentation.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Okay, so another really good question, actually. Can you explain the difference between the old caching model, which was a service we offered, versus the new caching model, which is now sort of an add-on to to a cloud service deployment? Can you tell us a little bit about the differences?
Well, we still have a what we call kind of a shared cache service, it's still there. We haven't turned it off or anything, but it was basically a multi-tenant cache that ran in a cluster that we managed that you could use to cache things in memory. And it kind of used a subset of the App Fabric programming model that you could do against it. And you basically pay for the amount of memory you want to use. And so It's good service, but one of the things that we got over the last sort of 6 to 9 months is a lot of feedback on the challenges, which is specifically around throttling. And because it's a multi-tenant service, we have to make sure no one person can bring down others. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that a lot of people said was, like, I use my cache because I'm going to throw a lot of load at it. And so I really don't want this throttling behavior. I want it to be completely unthrottled. And then other challenges in terms of, because it was running outside of the app, there was an extra millisecond or two of latency. And for security reasons, we couldn't expose the full App Fabric cache support or feature set without a lot more work. And so we kind of introduced this dedicated cache option as part of this most recent Azure update. And the benefit there is the cache actually runs with your app. And so it's completely unthrottled. Only you have access to it. Because it's actually it's located closer to your app from a network perspective, it's lightning fast. It's sort of an average of about 1 millisecond of latency. We expose the full App Fabric API. So it's a superset of the shared cache service that we previously had. So all your code in your old shared cache service just works. You now have more features that you can take advantage of. The other big benefit of it is because we support this feature we call co-located cache, where the cache actually runs in the VMs that your app code runs in. So you don't have to actually pay anything. It's literally no additional cost other than the existing VM cost that you're paying for. Yeah. And the benefit is you now can take advantage of unused memory in your VMs. It's a distributed cache, so if you've got even just 200 megs free in four VMs, you now have an 800 meg distributed cache. Any VM can put data in it. Any VM can get data out. And so it's a really great way to very easily add a bunch of better performance to your app, in many cases, for no cost at all.
Cool. And cool. I think there's also, was there an option to go dedicated with that as well? So if you wanted to spin up a full worker role, yep, or a couple instances where it's only there for caching,
yeah,
purposes?
Yeah, so you can run basically the cache using unused memory in your existing app, yep, code VMs, or you can just add another worker role into your solution and have a dedicated cache where the cache is the only thing in the worker role. Yep. And you can do that as well for even kind of better transparency. The beauty is we actually surface the cache perfmon counters through the admin portal. So you can even see how many cache hits am I getting, how much cache memory am I filling up with a distributed cache. And if you scale up your app using the standard scaling tab inside the new Windows Azure portal, your cache can dynamically increase as well. And unlike some other solutions where you have to do like an app redeployment or change app code, we can scale and decrease the cache dynamically or elastically. And so there's no app code changes required, no redeployment of the app required in order to do it. So it's really, really powerful.
Cool. Wow. So we've got actually a couple. These are kind of a combination, and I know these have been asked a bunch of times on Twitter. So I guess the questions are, will we support SSL in Windows Azure website? Will we support like IPs, static IPs, and then also custom domains and shared hosting? So I think maybe we can combine those. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, what we offer now, and then some of the plans, at least what you can, yeah, disclose for the future? Since it is a preview release now, we are kind of, yeah, missing a few things.
Yeah, the website option we have today is a preview release, so there's a few features we don't have yet. One of them is SSL. That obviously will be coming. And the other one is, today we allow you to do custom domains with websites. So you basically have, by default, if you just create one, it'll be like scottgoo.azurewebsites.com. Or you could do a custom domain at, you know, scottgoo.com. For custom domains, one question that this person was asking about that a lot of people have asked for is, right now to do custom domains, you need to use the reserved instance model on Azure. Can you use the kind of the shared model or the cheaper model with custom domains as well? That's not supported in today's preview, but we are looking to add custom domain support into the shared model. We're just kind of keeping an eye on our cost to make sure this free thing that we give away, what kind of capabilities we have. But we will have a cheaper option that doesn't require reserved instances to do custom domains in the future.
Okay.
Someone else was asking a question of, can you use multiple IPs with a VM or with a cloud service? Again, that's something that we don't support today, but it's something that we're looking to add in the future with Windows Azure, and so you'll see that show up hopefully in the not-too-distant future as well.
Cool. So actually, you mentioned the difference between the shared model. I think maybe it would be good to spend a little time on that. I know you've talked about it in your demos, but you know, you said the shared or cheaper model. Is the shared model just a starting point for developers, and then the real, you know, the real hosting is the reserved? Or, you know, we generally talk about scale up, scale out. Do you want to go into a little detail about that and kind of what the uses of each one would be?
Yeah, so I mean, the shared model, I think, is going to be good for more than just dev. It's actually, we were designing it so that you can run sites on it as well. One of the nice things about the shared model is we actually allow you to specify how many instances of your app run in the shared model. And so you can basically hit a slider and say, I want 1, 2, or 3 shared instances. And that will cause your app to be load balanced across more machines. And so it's not quite like having a full virtual machine, but it's a lot better than just having one process. And so we are looking to have an option, and it'll probably cost a little bit of money, where if you want to have multiple shared instances, but it'll be cheaper than having to get a full VM. And that will support the ability to do custom domains and things like that. The nice thing about the reserved instance model is you're the only tenant on a virtual machine, so you have the whole machine to yourself. And that gives you better isolation and better performance predictability. And again, you can specify any number of machines that you want to run reserved instance mode. And what we're trying to do is have kind of a very nice gradual model where you can start absolutely for free, no obligation, and then, you know, oh, I'm getting a little bit more traffic. Let me scale up to a second shared instance. Oh, a little bit more traffic. Let's scale up to another instance. Oh, I want a full VM and I can scale up there. And the cost, you know, will be very gradual so that, you know, if it's just a free site, you can just still host it for free. But if it's a site that you want to run, but you don't really want to pay $50 for a VM, you know, there'll be a couple of cheaper options that you can do in the shared model.
Cool.
Okay. And the beauty is you don't have to redeploy your code. You get the same TFS, Git, FTP, web deploy experience in all of them, same instantaneous, you know, split second site creation, you know, 6 seconds I can create new sites, regardless of any of those sliding scales. And the goal is just, you know, make it completely elastic and frictionless to kind of start for free and just scale up to literally infinite amounts of resources.
Very cool. Yeah. Did you want to take the next one?
I think that's actually something that, you know, for a lot of people that are watching, you know, I think a lot of us are used to kind of the traditional on-premise model. Right. Where you have resources that you buy, and you know, if you measure the utilization on your servers inside your enterprise, you know, often it's, you know, average of 10%, and you know, if you've got 10 of those resources at 10%, you're not really taking full advantage of that version. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of the things that the cloud does change, and it's a big mindset shift, is this ability to just say, oh, let me just turn the dial and turn up the juice or turn it down. And the ability to kind of turn up as you need it is something that I think a lot of people see about the cloud. The other really cool thing is the ability to turn it down. You know, mm-hmm. if at the end of the day, your employees go home, yeah. and instead of needing 100 servers, you can get by with 10, you can automatically provision that to just downgrade those resources. And then, you know, next morning, spin them back up. Uh-huh. In the dev test environment, I know there's a lot of developers watching, with us, that MSDN subscription hours for Azure come into become really handy. Is if you want a VM that you're using for development, you can create, you know, spin it up at the start of the day in a few minutes, start using it during the day, and then when you go home at night, you can turn it off, and you're not paying anything for that VM overnight or on the weekend. And so those MSDN hours, you know, can often let you run a VM 24/7. For free, but if you actually turn it off on weekends and at nights and things like that, it allows you to spin up multiple VMs during the day, and, you know, again, also effectively for free. And that ability to both turn on and turn off is really, really powerful.
So you've mentioned VMs a few times here, and I did notice in the keynote that they talked a little bit about on-premise to cloud and cloud to on-premise scenarios. Yeah. Could you perhaps give us a few details on how people may perhaps be able to take something in their virtualization stack on-premise? They may have VMs there. Is it just as easy as grabbing that and pushing it straight up? And could you sort of tell us the workflow that they'd have for that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the nice things about the virtual machine model that we have in Windows Azure is we support the same VHD file format that we use on Windows Server and Windows Client today. So if you have actually Windows 8, it comes with Hyper-V built in. And so if you create a VM using that and then upload it, it will just work in Azure. And so if you use the Azure portal to kind of step, create a VM and get it up and running, you can turn it off and then download it and literally just boot it up on top of your Windows desktop or Windows server running in your local environment. And no import-export required. It's the same file format used in both. And that flexibility and kind of what we call portability to run the VMs anywhere, whether it's your on-premise environment in Azure, or you can create a VM and run it in someone else's service provider hosting environment, we think is really powerful and gives you a lot of options. And the only nice thing about it, if you're bought Microsoft software under kind of what we call software assurance, which is what typically enterprises do, we don't require you to actually repurchase the software if you want to run it in a different environment. So if you've already bought SQL Server under SA, you can just upload it and run it in Azure, and you don't have to buy a new license, and vice versa. Right. And so again, it gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of how you manage your workloads.
It's pretty awesome. Flexible and open, I think, are two of the keywords on the new Windows Azure document.
Yeah.
And rock solid as
and
well.
And rock solid, yeah.
Awesome.
Very nice. So I guess another question here. Let's go with the cost model one. Not always the most exciting thing to talk about, but certainly important. SharePoint something, sorry, it's cut off. I can't read your full Twitter handle. Asks SharePoint L Horn. Are there cost model case studies available for Windows Azure? He notes that the Azure calculator is good, but it is maybe, you know, if you're building a really complicated solution, a little lightweight. Can you explain a little bit about costs on Windows Azure? Maybe particularly since I think it's SharePoint, you know, the comparison between running SharePoint on-premise versus in the cloud. Do we have a little more information on that?
It's a very good question. I mean, in terms of, you know, we are going to put up a lot of case studies that walk through both architecturally how you stand up services, but also kind of trying to explain a little bit how to figure out how much they're going to cost. You know, one of the things that we do provide with Azure today is it's new actually in the last 6 months, is the ability to see your bill in real time and actually to track what your utilization is effectively in real time. I mean, it's a few minute delay, but effectively in real time. And likewise, with the new portal that we just shipped last week, you can now monitor your performance, like CPU, disk I/O, network activity, in real time in the portal, or through PowerShell or through our Bash scripts. And so, you know, what I typically recommend for people that are trying to figure out how much is this going to cost is try to get a proof of concept up real quick, throw a bunch of load at it, and you can very quickly see how much resources you're consuming. And because, again, you only pay for the hours that you use. You know, even if you just get a simulated app up and running and you simulate the number of, you know, requests and traffic, you can get a really good sense very quickly of the exact cost of what it's going to cost, and you can kind of plan out based on that. And so we are going to have case studies and all those other things as well. We do have a nice calculator that lets you guess beforehand, but I also would recommend just try to build a proof of concept and simulate it and get a good sense.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, that's really fantastic about the cloud is you can build, I mean, like an extra large VM is you know, pricey, I guess, or not pricey, but depends who you are, if you're a guy in a garage, an extra large VM is maybe a little pricey, but, you know, that costs a little bit to run, but like you said, 1 hour of that is only, you know, a few cents, 32 cents, I can't even remember off the top
30,
of my head,
32 cents
or something, so you could run a huge deployment. You know, using PowerShell scripts or using some other or System Center, you could deploy an enormous deployment to Windows Azure and run it, like you said, for 2 hours, and you know, throw load at it, and it's really only going to cost you, you know, dollars, maybe, you know, whatever. But
yeah.
You know, you can't do that with you can't do that with a data center. You can't say, oh, let's go buy a bunch of servers and you know, build a data center and then see what happens. Oh, yeah. We need twice as much. So
again, that's kind of the flexibility and I think the mindset shift that all of us. You know, I'd say a lot of us, you know, even within Microsoft, like when people say, oh, we need a new database or we need a new server to do X, and, you know, it's like, oh, do we have it in the budget? And, you know, how long is it going to take to stand up that new hardware? Do we have lab space? You know, there's a lot of kind of decision tree that kind of goes through, and the ability to actually say, okay, let's spin it up. And, you know, in 5 minutes, have a new database or have a new VM is something that you just don't expect, and so you don't even think about it. The other thing is this ability to spin up and spin down. If you wanted to, you mentioned, you know, 32 cents to do an extra large VM. It's, you know, I think 8 cents right now for a Windows VM for small. You know, if you want to spin up, you know, effectively 1,000 VMs for an hour, you know, it's $80. Is that my math right, or is it? Yeah, I mean, so it's $80. And so, you know, 1,000 servers is something that a lot of people generally don't even think about doing. But if you've got, you know, a big job that you want to actually compute, that ability to kind of, in a heartbeat, just say, okay, let's spin up 1,000, let's spin them down, gives you a lot of flexibility that, you know, again, I think we're not used to actually even thinking about in terms of doing, or, you know, take 100 servers for $8.
Yeah.
You know, it's the cost of, you know, I don't know.
An expensive coffee.
An expensive coffee,
a fancy coffee.
Fancy coffee.
That's worth
it. A few Red Bulls, in my case.
And so, you know, I think that's going to be, you know, something that a lot of people will start to take advantage of. We have some customers today on Windows Azure in the financial business, and one called Milliman that we have a case study on. And they spin up 10,000 servers each night to process financial data before the next Wall Street session opens. And so they basically process all this data, and then around 6 a.m., they shut them down. And they basically keep them shut down, or they have one or two servers running until, you know, 8 o'clock the next night. They spin them back up, they process the data, they shut them down. And that just, you know, trying to spin up 8,000 servers in your own data center environment, would not only probably cause your CIO to have a heart attack, but just physically pouring that much concrete and getting that infrastructure would be a huge upfront cost. And I know someone asked, you know, is the pricing, I pay upfront and then I pay hourly? No, you just have to pay hourly.
Yeah.
We do have a way, if you know you're going to use something, you can actually pre-purchase stuff for a discount, but you don't actually have any upfront costs. It literally is just pay as you go. And so, you know, again, that's pretty flexible.
Cool. Well, I think we're actually a little bit over, but really great questions. I know there was a bunch of Twitter questions that we didn't get to, so you'll answer every single one of them. No, I'm just kidding.
Please email them tonight.
Yeah, exactly. So, but thank you very much for joining us, Scott. Thanks, Nick, as always, for hosting with me, and we'll let you go. I'm sure you've got a busy day ahead of you. So thanks, everyone, for watching, and this was Cloud Cover Live.
Thanks for having me.